ॐ भद्रं कर्णे विष्णुयाम देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः त्यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। We're on verse 2 of this third section. Samane Drikshe. Samane Drikshe Purusho Nimagnaha. Samane Drikshe Purusho Nimagnaha. Anishaya Shochati Muhyamanaha. Anishaya Shochati Muhyamanaha. Jushtam Yada Pashati Anyamesham. Jishtam yaja pashyati anyamesham asya mahimanam iti veta shokaha asya mahimanam iti veta shokaha. Samane vrikshe purushaha nimagnaha anishaya Shochati Muhyamanaha Jushtam Yada Pashyati Anyam Isham Asya Mahimanam Iti Vitashokaha. Remember, this section starts with, just to refresh you on the verse, there are two birds that have beautiful golden wings. It's golden wings, beautiful wings, stands for the consciousness. This is two birds that are together, good friends, sitting on the same tree, clinging to the same tree, these two birds. Of the two, one of them is eating a variety of fruits, fruits of all different flavors, bitter, sour, sweet, pleasing. And the other bird is just sitting there, shining, just sitting there as self-luminous, sitting there just as a conscious being, not participating, not eating. Right? The other one says anashan. The other one is there, that's there, is anashan. It's not eating anything. It's just simply being. It's simply being. So now, that's the introduction. Right? Now this chapter is going to build off of that introduction, or these next several verses. Now it says, Samane Vrikshe Purushaha Nimagnaha. The one Purusha, the one person, because there's two there, right? Samane Vrikshe, on this same tree. The same tree, the Vriksha, the tree is likened to the, is a metaphor for the physical body, or the body, the Sukshma Sharira and the physical body. So on this same tree, one person, one Purusha there, is Nimagdaha, is drowning. Nimagdaha is drowning. Okay, so the one tree, one of them is drowning. That Nimagdaha, that Purusha who's drowning, Muhyamanaha, so deluded, confused, being confused, Muhyamanaha, that confused one who's drowning, Shochati grieves, Anishaya, being helpless. Isha means having power, having capacity, the ability to accomplish something, to do something. Overlordship is Isha. Anishaya is helpless, no power, no ability to control things. So that one bird on this same tree where the two birds are, one of the birds, the Purusha, the Jiva, right, is Nimagna, overwhelmed. Nimagna, The example, Shankara talks about this nimagna, being what it means to be drowned. He gives a more example of it in the Bhasha. He says, you know, there's this type of gourd that they have in India. It's called a bottle gourd. And it's usually, empty. It's hollow. And so if you have this hollow bottle gourd sitting on top of the water, it'll just bounce along on top of the water. But if for some reason the bottle gourd is filled with mud or with dirt, the weight of it will pull it down into the water and the gourd will be drowning there underneath the water. So here he says the jiva is like this bottle gourd filled with the mud, right, of avidya, of ignorance, that causes this kama. It causes all the avidya, causes kama, krodha, desire, anger, all of the disparities and all of the pain that we suffer, the sukha, dukkha, that we suffer in the world. So this jiva drowning because of ignorance, causing this delusion that causes one to feel so helpless and to grieve. So this one who is sitting there grieving. But jushtam yada, let's look at the whole verse first and I'll unfold it. Jushtam yada, when that one pashyati sees, when that one who's drowning there, pashyati sees anyam, the other who is isham, the other who is the Lord, the other bird, right? When he sees the other bird who is the Lord, who is jushtam. Jushtam means that which is the most desirable, that which is worshipful, that which is desired, that which is wanted. So that other bird, when that one who is drowning sees this other bird that is jushtam, the most desirable, who is the Lord, then for that one, vitashokaha, that one becomes somebody whose shoka, whose sorrow, whose grief is vita, removed, taken away. Vita, he becomes a vitashokaha, one who no longer has any grief. That one thinking, asya mahimanam, all of this, asya mahimanam iti vitashokaha, that one who has no grief, what is he viewing that makes him have no grief? So that's the iti. Asya mahimanam. All of this is his glory. All of his is this glory. Whose glory? The glory of that anyam, the other bird who is the Lord, right? The anyam isham, the other bird who is the Lord, who is jushtam, the most desirable. So now this is just introducing the two birds. So let's just take it more about what happens when one knows the two birds. Okay. So. I almost did a guided meditation today, but then I decided I'd kind of, in light of this verse, but I thought I'd kind of walk us through it instead. We use the examples of the two birds. Not that there are two separate birds inside. There are not two birds inside this body. There are not two conscious beings inside this body. There's in fact only one purusha. Right? There's in fact only one bird. There's only one being. But because of ajnanam, a jiva is created. Because of ignorance, because of self-ignorance, an individual entity is fabricated, in fact, in your mind. That's the second bird. And so I was realizing as we were meditating here, it would be nice for us to recognize what is exactly right now and here. What are these, the two birds that we're talking about? That really, so interesting. For the ajnani, who doesn't have self-knowledge, there's only one bird. There's the jiva. There's the one bird who's the jiva. Right, and the Ishwara, the Lord, is something out there usually, separate, right? For the Jnani, there's only one bird, which is the Atma, the Ishwara, right? But now, in order to gain knowledge, what has to happen is, first of all, we have to say, all right, inside, there's not just one bird, the Jiva, there's two birds there. That means that we need some Viveka. We need to be able to differentiate the Ishwara bird from the Jiva bird. Ishwara means Lord, Jiva means individual. So once we differentiate the Ishwara bird from the Jiva bird, we realize that I am the Ishwara bird. Right? The jiva bird is mitya, right? So the jiva bird becomes consumed or integrated, right, subsumed into the Ishvara bird. So I was thinking, what is that like in for your experience? What it is this. And why one reason why meditation is so good is it gives you, in meditation, you're given a chance to totally slow down your mind and differentiate your conscious presence, the being, your being, that is simply abiding. The conscious me, your own presence, is simply abiding. It is not engaged in any type of activity whatsoever. And in fact, when you slow things down, your mind can easily recognize that fact, that there's your own presence that is simply quiet, still, unengaged being. You simply are you. When you say, I am, the one that those words are referring to simply is. You're not engaged in anything. And while you are the presence, you are the being that, you could say words like, you are the being, the one whom you are. You are the being for whom all of these thoughts are. Say, just as a jiva. All of these thoughts. You're sitting in meditation, you can hear the sound outside, we could hear the people in the park, we could hear the shuffle in the room, we could feel the relaxation in our body. All of the variety of perceptions, thoughts going through the mind, all of these things that are taking place, these are illumined. By illumined, I mean all of them are known, right? Whether it's an external sound, where it's a perception of the physical body, where it's an internal thought or feeling or just imaginative thinking, whatever is going on, what all of these things have in common is that they are known. They are shining in awareness. Now, what you can notice, if you're just totally relaxed, not engaging in anything, say no, by that I mean no ahankara there. Nobody's saying, say you're hearing a thought outside, you're hearing the noise outside. That noise is simply known. Now, you could also come in with another type of thought, the ahankara, the I notion, the jiva bird, right? The jiva bird. Another thought that now says, oh, I'm hearing all those sounds outside. Okay? That's a thought, right? That's the jiva bird. That's the ahankara. That's also known. It's as known as the thought outside. Okay? Now let's watch how the jiva bird gets involved. This thought comes in and it says, I am listening. I'm hearing the sound outside. I'm trying to meditate. I'm trying to meditate now. Are they going to be quiet? Or is this going to continue? Well, I guess I'll just ignore them. I can just ignore them. Actually, they're just sounds, whatever. All I'm saying is whatever commentary you had, that commentary is born of the ahankara, which itself is known. It's as well known as the sound, right? But now the ajiva bird is engaging with the sound, right? And then it can also be creating moods and emotions and opinions about whether it likes the sound or not, right? It's still just the jiva bird. It's still, every single thing that's being done there is known. Whatever engagement is taking place in reference to the sound, that is known. It starts out with just, I am listening to the sound, right? I am the hearer of the sound. And then come the comments about the sound. Now say, the sound is beautiful and is adding to your meditation. Then you love the sound and you relax into the sound and the ahankara, all of this is known, right? The commentary is known as well as the sound. And now the mind is appreciating the sound and having an emotional response to the sound, to the beauty of the sound, right? And then the ahankara is saying, this sound is so beautiful, I'm so lucky to be meditating now in light of this beautiful sound. Right? And so as the ahankara is talking, with it giving its opinion about the sound, if the opinion is positive, The mind is responding to that positive opinion and relaxing. Right? And in the relaxation caused by the positive opinion to the sound, the mind is then reflecting happiness. As it relaxes, it reflects the self and it enjoys some happiness that is true to its own nature. Right? And then the ahankara, the jiva bird, comes back, you know, and says, "Ah, oh, I'm so happy. You know, this is so..." Because now it's commenting on the state of mind. Right? Everybody with me? All jiva bird. All this while, your being simply is. Your being, the conscious being that you are, is simply abiding. Your being is the one because of whom all of this is. Your being, the second bird, the Ishwara bird, right, is the one that is lighting up the jiva bird. The jiva bird is the ahankara that is identifying with the thought, right? The ahankara, the jiva bird, means eye notion. The ahankara is as much lit up as the state of mind, as whatever is going on. I'm just using the sound as an example. And so now, for the Ajnani, the one who has no knowledge, there is no recognition of the me, the Ishwara bird, just my own presence that is absolutely changeless, is simply abiding, right? As the very self of the entire experience. All of the different levels of experience, the sounds, the physical sensations, the thoughts in the mind, the moods, the emotions, the I thought, the I am doing this, I am not liking that, I am liking this, and the mental relaxation that it causes, I am not liking this, and the mental tension that it causes. All of these things, the entirety of that experience is known. Right? It all shines. Every single thought modification that you have. And the jiva bird is simply the mind, the thought in the mind that says, I am experiencing this. I am doing this. Whereas in fact, the I am that it is itself is the changeless, quiet Ishwara bird that in fact is anushnan, not eating anything. Not eating anything. The jiva bird is eating. How is it eating? Say the sound outside is pleasing. I love the sound. It's eating the sound. That's a pleasure. Swadu. That's its taste. That's its taste now. It's eating that particular experience. Now say the sound is rather grating. And it doesn't like the sound. Is not really appropriate for what it's trying to do. And so now that sound, right, becomes swadu. It becomes another taste that the jiva bird doesn't like that taste. Right? And so the mind then becomes tense. So that's another flavor, right? So based upon your likes and dislikes, really, the karmapalas, the fruits of your action, you know, and your raga dvesha, your likes and dislikes, you're having, the jiva bird is having all of these tastes and responding to the taste, right? So another way of saying that, using our language, the jiva is having all of these experiences and responding to them. I like this and I don't like that. This is a good experience. This is a bad experience. Of course, the bad experiences cause dukkha because I don't want them, and so they're causing tension, which causes the taste of sorrow. Right? It's interesting to think of sorrow as a taste, you know? But that's what I'm eating. The jiva bird is eating all of these experiences. All the while that this is going on, the other bird, the Ishwara bird, is just the silent being, the silent presence of myself, who is the one from whom all of this has come, but is the silent, totally asanga, unattached presence of myself that is not eating anything, is not changing at all, is not tasting anything, at the same time that all of this activity is illumined. And so this is the differentiation that has to be made. So here he says, in this, he says, samane vrikshe, seated in the same tree of the body, in the same body, the body with the subtle body and the physical. I'm seated in this. The one Purusha is drowning in delusion, right? He's drowning in the delusion of this avidya, sorrowing because helpless. Helpless because, as Shankara says here, he says, this helplessness, he says, or maybe I'll get that in the next verse. But he sees himself in this verse. He says, "This one who's drowning, because of the Dehatma Buddhi." You know, he says, "You know, I am supposed to be an important person. Aham Amushyaha. I am supposed to be an important person. This is my son here. You know, this is my grandchild. You know." I am fat, or I am thin, or I am becoming old. I am full of excellent qualities, gunavan. These are just different things. This person, I'm a gunavan. I have so many good qualities about myself. You know. Or the opposite. I am nirgunaha. I'm worthless. You know. I don't have anything. I'm just a useless, worthless person. Or I'm magnificent. I'm full of guna. I'm sukha dukhi. I'm a sukhi. I'm so happy. I'm a dukhi. I'm so unhappy. And then in another place he says, I'm anishya. I'm totally helpless. You know, I can say my son has been destroyed. My wife has been killed. This is Shankara. My son has been destroyed. My wife or my husband has died. What is the use of living? You know? Nothing is going in the way that I want. There's no possibility of anything lasting. I can't hang on to anything. I can't make the things be the way that I want. I don't have control. So continually recognizing the mortality, right? And the smallness and the lack of power and the lack of control. The lack of control to control my happiness so that I can have the things I desire. And those are the things that I desire will protect me and encompass me. And the things that I don't want or don't like, those things will stay away. That's what everybody wants. Right? It's not people don't want to have all of the things they hate come toward them and all of the things they love go away. Right? You'd have to be very deluded. You'd have to be mentally ill. Not that we're not all mentally ill. But we're all mentally ill in the same way. Right? We're all deluded in the same way. You know, and there's kind of a something natural to that delusion. Every being wants to be happy because that ananda really is the nature of the self. And everybody shuns or pushes away things that we think will make us happy because that is not my being. You know, so the experience of that being is experiencing something foreign. So we try to push it away. We want control. But here, the Purusha, the Jiva bird, is drowning in lack of control and grieves over that lack of control. You know, I remember when I was it was a very moving experience. When I was studying to become a psychologist, the first supervisor I had, his name was Mel Torley. This was many years ago. He was really quite old. He was in his late 70s or early 80s and still very fit, very sharp, but old enough to be getting ready to retire. And he was talking one day about, not in the too distant past, his mother's passing away. And he said, he was talking about the agony, that's the word he used, he was talking about the agony of not being able to save his mother. You know, because he had a great love for his family, but the agony of being powerless. So what he was talking, the powerlessness of being able to do something to stop that from happening. He had no power to do it, and he was talking about the agony that he felt around that. And I recall, and these are just extreme examples, right? But I recall a close friend of mine some 20 years ago, again, who lost her husband to a brain tumor and lost him, took over a three or four month period. And the hardest thing for her was coming to grips with that powerlessness, that with what and who you love the most, what you need the most, what you want the most, there comes a time when you recognize that you are not Ishwara. You are not the Lord. You don't have control over that situation. And so the human being, those are extreme examples, but we are fussing with that on smaller levels, even minute levels, all of the time. You know, if we had control over what we want to be, we'd be in Swargaloka. But that's how they talk about Swargaloka. As you desire it, so it will be. And then you change your mind and then it'll become that. You don't ever have to go through this, you know, having the universe not obey you. But, of course, the problem with Swargaloka, these heaven worlds, is that that's only a vacation. Right? In the Hindu cosmology, the Swargaloka, if you go to heaven, it's not forever. It's time-bound. It's the result of karma. So you'll go and have this wonderful vacation where, you know, you don't have to worry about sukha-dukha. And you don't have to worry about it even though you're satisfying yourself with objects in the world. You still don't have to worry about it. You can be totally ignorant. I mean, when you go to Swargaloka, you are. You're still a total ajnani. But you get this little reprieve, you know. Like when I went to the Caribbean for that wedding. You know, I had this little week, you know, of walking along the beach. It wasn't quite Swargaloka, but still, I was thinking, you know, this is a vacation. It's a vacation. You know, it's time out where you're taken away from your responsibilities and just dropped in this nice little area to just kind of, you know, bask and enjoy yourself. But, you know, the time runs out. So same with Swargaloka also. But here, this isn't Swargaloka. This Bhuloka, this loka, 50% punya, 50% papa. You definitely don't control the situation, you know. And you recognize in that your mortality, you know, your finiteness, your weakness. There's what we call, in Shankara calls dinabhava. That state of being small, that state of not being in control, of being weak. In reference to the creation, we're very, very weak because so many things have to say yes for us to get our way. You know, they have to go along with us for us to get our way. The example they use in the Shastra, in fact, is when you're if they liken prarabdha, the exhaustion of the karmas that caused you to take this birth, that those karmas will take you from birth to death. And for a person who's going along with their prarabdha, in other words, your mind is in harmony with your prarabdha, in other words, you want what your prarabdha is giving you, right? So you're in agreement with the prarabdha. There's no rub. Your experience then is one of swimming along and in a river with a nice moving current. You're swimming, you know, along with the current. No problem. Everything is easy. You're moving right along. There's no obstruction. It's like those walking escalators, you know, in those level type of walkways I love those. in the airport. You know, you're walking along and everything is so easy. You're just so light. Everything's working for you, you know. So you're going with the prarabdha. It's like that too, because your mind is wanting what you have. Your mind is in harmony with your life. So you're just swimming along. But what if, and this is the where the dinatvam comes in, this weakness comes. If you're walking, going along with your prarabdha, you're one with Ishwara. No problem. This is Ishwara's world and you're in harmony with it. So that's very powerful. No problem at all, because the Ishwara is in control and you're agreeing with that. Say now, you're moving along and you see the Joneses over there in their stream, you know, moving in a different direction. And that looks better to you. And you decide. Now you make this decision that, no, you don't want to go downstream in this direction. And so you decide that, no, you're going to go upstream. Of course, you don't know it's upstream. You don't know it's upstream. But you turn around because you want to enjoy what the Joneses are enjoying. And you start swimming in the other direction. And what is that like? Yeah. Well, it's like nothing works, basically. Nothing you do works, you know? And everything that isn't working is hard. Not only is not working, it's wearing you out. You're losing ground. And nobody is going along with you, right? You're all alone in it. Until finally you're so exhausted that you turn around, the universe turns you around and starts pushing you downstream again. But this turning around we're doing all of the time, and every time that we do it, we're feeling that weakness, right? Because the stream is a lot stronger than we are. And so the jiva bird doesn't know anything about that, right? They're just trying to live. They're just trying to live. And the ahankara, this I notion, is so totally identified with the mind and the doership, what they call kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam. I am doing this. I am enjoying that. I am hearing the sounds. I am sitting here meditating. I am the responsible one for all of the fruits of my actions. That's the jiva bird, right? There is no recognition, in fact, of the Ishwara bird, the one from whom this whole thing has come. Another way to understand this, to take it a little bit closer, is again to look at the dream. And now look at a lucid dream. If you are having a lucid dream, there's both the recognition in a dream. Lucid dream or imagination means you're awake to the whole thing. You recognize this is my dream.
Is imagination the same as lucid dream?
Well, the good thing about using an imagination, if you have an imagination that where you're lost in the imagination, you know, the imagination is full, like a dream, is that you're awake to it as an imagination. So that's what makes it like a lucid dream. You're awake to the lucid dream as a dream, and yet this whole dream is taking place, right? But you're awake to it. So now, in that situation, say you're awake to the dream and you're a character in the dream. There's you, the conscious being, and you, the character in the dream. Right? Everybody with me on that? The conscious being is the Ishwara bird. Right? That is you. And that is the you of the dream character in the dream also. That's the jiva bird. Right? But the jiva bird, and the jiva bird is the one looking out at all of these experiences, engaging in all of the experiences with the ahankara, recognizing himself or herself as a limited little bird, right? All of the while having for itself the Ishwara bird, right? The conscious being that is the one which is the self of the limited being. So we enjoy this actually in dream and in imagination. You enjoy this dynamic in a limited way. That's why it's important, I think, to play with your imagination and play with your dream to be able to recognize this experience that actually in meditation also is so obvious. You know, it's what we call aparoksha jnanam. It's direct, immediate knowledge, right? The direct, immediate knowledge that's brought about by distinguishing, differentiating in your experience, the known experiences, all of the knowledge that's shining there, that includes all these external sensory perceptions, that includes the physical body that is shining there known, that includes the thoughts in the mind and the I thought that is identifying with all these things are shining there known. My own presence, right, is just silent being. And then you can have your mind recognize this fact. Can it recognize this presence, this self-evident presence, it can label it. It can recognize it because it's that self-evident presence that's lighting up the mind, that is not moving or changing as the mind changes. So the ahankara in the mind can recognize, the mind itself can recognize that, ah, the self that I am is still. It's never doing anything. Even as I'm talking right now, my being is still. As I'm thinking right now, my being is still. As I'm perceiving right now, my being is still. To recognizing that one, the person, the bird that had been drowning in ignorance, recognizing that one, that Ishwara bird, says that Ishwara bird, this third line, that Ishwara bird, which is Isham, which is the very self, it is the very Lord of all of these experiences. Now, this is something that, and it is jishtam, it is most desirable. This is something that on a, what's the right word to use? Let me use more words to try to explain what I'm trying to say. Right now, you will say, just without knowledge, forget knowledge from it, you will say, this is my body. And if I use a kind of an odd language, I would say, I am the Lord of this body. Right? I am the conscious being for whom this body is. That's my experience. Right? This is my mind. I am the Lord of this mind. I am the conscious being, the me, who has this mind, for whom this mind is. Right? These are my sense organs. I am the Lord of these sense organs. I am the one because of whom these sense organs are. Right? I am the one who has these sense organs. So I am the Lord of the body. I am the Isha. I am the Lord of this body. I am the Lord of this mind. Okay? That's mine. I say like that. Now, when you recognize just your own presence, that presence is the one, that self, is the one for whom all of this is. That's a self-evident fact. All of these experiences that are there are for me. They are mine. I am the self of all of those experiences, even though I am not doing anything. All of these experiences aren't for anything else or anyone else. I am the center of all of these experiences. So now I recognize that this one who is the center, the silent being who's not eating, who is not changing, but who's the very center of all of these experiences, all of these experiences are his glory or her glory or its glory. All of these experiences are its glory. Now, how can it say that? Because all of these experiences shine, right? All of these experiences are a display. Every experience that you have is actually a display. It is part of Ishwara. It is known. As it comes, it is known. Whether it be a sound or a sight or a perception or a mood or an emotion or the ahankara or an intellection, all of these experiences are taking place as Ishwara's glory. Why do we say it's Ishwara's glory? Because the Ishwara bird, the conscious being that I am, is not participating. I am not becoming big or small or changing in any way. And so the conscious self, the changeless conscious self that I am, who is not being affected in any way by all of this, of which this body, mind, sense organs are a part, how do I think of it? I think of it as his glory, as the glory of Ishwara. Now look, if you recognize, remember that the jiva bird, right, is not the self. The jiva bird is mithya. Right? Or I could say like this, the jiva bird has for itself the Ishwara bird. Right? There's not a separate conscious being there. And so the conscious being that is there, when the mind says, I am, and then it says, I am the mind who is experiencing this, that's the ajnanam. Do you see that? If you have a thought now, and the thought is, I am my mind. Or say you're in your thought, your mind is having an emotion. Say it's agitated. Now you have a thought. First you have the agitated experience. Right, so that's being illumined. That's shining. That's Ishwara's glory. There it is, shining. Agitation, okay? Now you have a thought, the ahankara, that comes and says, I am agitated. Right? That's the jiva bird. I am agitated. That also is a thought, which is known. Okay? Now think about it like this. Any thought you have is just that. Whether it's the I thought or whether it's a mood, an emotion, a perception, a thought is a thought. So now when you say, have the thought that says, I am, right? Say this thought, I am, which is really a thought that labels your own being. This thought arises, I am, but there's no knowledge of what is the source of the being that this thought enjoys. Right? It says, I am, and that thought is filled with being, my being. But there's also ignorance there. So this I am thought has no idea what is the source of the being, and so it takes itself to be the being. So now it says, I am, the mind is saying, I am, and what is the condition of the mind? Agitated. So the mind that says, has the I am thought, taking the consciousness that it enjoys to belong to the mind, now it also identifies with whatever the mind is doing. If the mind has an emotion like agitation, then the thought says, doesn't stop with just I am, it says, I am agitated. It says, I am happy. Or it says, I am thinking. Or I am feeling tired. Or it has like a domino effect, this I am, now it identifies with the body and say your knee hurts. I, me, am this body who has a sore knee. You say, I have a sore knee. These are all thoughts. Thoughts that are illumined in your being. They're thoughts that reside and are not away from the Ishwara bird. Right? The Ishwara bird is the conscious being that is simply, quietly, changelessly abiding. But the jiva bird doesn't know that. So the I am of the Ishwara bird, it takes to be itself. This is the relationship between mitya and satyam. Mitya means it depends, that it's that which depends totally upon what is real for its existence, like in the wave water. The water, the wave is mitya. It depends totally for its being on satyam, on that which is real, which is the water. So here the jiva bird, which is saying, I am and I am doing this, I am the seer, I am the enjoyer, I am the one who is going to die, right? I am happy, I am sorrowful. All of these, this jiva bird, this ahankara, is identifying with all of these states of the experience. It's identifying you, the Ishwara, the self, with all these states of experience. That's what creates a jiva bird. In fact, there is no jiva bird, really. Let's put it this way. The jiva bird that you experience is mitya, because the self of the jiva bird is just the pure, silent being that you are that's not doing anything. Right? And in meditation, that becomes very clear. You have to ask yourself, am I doing anything at all? You say, no, there's nothing happening. It's just me. It's just me there. And is that me that is there desirable or not? That's the jushtam. Jushtam means that self, the Ishwara bird, the conscious being that you are, is absolutely whole and complete. It's jushtam. Jushtam means that which is sought by everybody, that which is worshipped. Worship means worshipful. That worshipful means that is what I want. You know, that is what I adore. Jushtam is the beloved. you know, that which is most desirable. So that Ishwara bird, one's recognized, that one who's anushnam, not eating at all, that one that is just simply being, simply seated, sitting there, me, that one is recognized as jushtam, that which I seek. Jushtam is that which I seek. And having recognized that, I become vitashokaha. My sorrow is gone because the nature of the Ishwara bird is jushtam. It's what I want to be. The Ishwara bird, that conscious being, is what I want to be. And then what do I see then once I recognize that asanga, the unattached nature of myself, how do I see all of these experiences? As Ishwara's glory. Because if my being is not an object, it is simply pure consciousness, not an object, right? Then all of these things, all of these experiences belong to the Lord. All of the experiences that I have, in fact, belong to the whole, belong to the total. They are the glory of, let me put it that way, they are the glory of, they are the manifestation of that one bird who's not doing anything. They're the manifestation of the Lord. So he'll get on more into that in the next verse. Yeah. But let's stop there. Let me just take a minute. This asanga, the unattached, changeless nature of yourself, is once you're able to differentiate your being in this way, then that recognition is constant. That becomes your constant. Because nothing's necessary to light up consciousness. So once you remove or differentiate all the perceptions that are known, then there's no time when that asanga, Ishwara bird, is hidden. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
conscious you are. Like, how does the mind recognize that?
Oh, okay. Consciousness is its own light. Okay, so the mind isn't giving you an experience of yourself. Okay, that much is clear? Okay, so nothing's lighting that up, it's its own light. The mind's problem is that it takes itself to be one with that consciousness. Right, that's its problem. So it doesn't see that the conscious being illumines the mind and the mind is known. It doesn't recognize that the mind goes on thinking and changing and the consciousness remains the same. That's because of ignorance. Now, one reason that ignorance is there is because really the ignorance is considered to be beginningless. There's never a time, as long as the mind is, it enjoys consciousness. So why shouldn't it think, I am the conscious being, right? Because it's always, consciousness is always there. Okay, consciousness is actually the substance of the whole creation. So there's never a time that the mind's away from that at all. And so now the ahankara is the one that comes and says, which is a part of the mind, talking in the mind, it says, I am conscious. I am the conscious being. So it's taking to itself the consciousness that illumines it. Okay? Now, when the teaching comes along, what happens is that through the teaching, different teaching methodologies, it makes the mind recognize the reality of its experience in a different way. It recognizes that it itself is illumined and that my own self-experience, now talking about Atma, the self, is not dependent on it. The mind itself recognizes that. Consciousness is not talking. Consciousness is not saying, I am stable, changeless, asanga. Because it doesn't have any parts to be talking. That's the mind that's talking. But the mind is recognizing that the Atma, the me, the conscious being, is stable, changeless, asanga, and that it itself is continually changing and illumined. And so it recognizes that the conscious being that it had taken to be one with itself is actually the substrate or the actual satyam, the actual truth of itself, but independent. Right? So the mind itself recognizes that the conscious me, my own presence, that the ahankara had taken to belong to the mind, right? It recognizes the independence of my being. So now what happens, when that happens, is that the ahankara, which is a type of thought, that used to say, I am the mind, now recognizes that the I am that it was labeling is the Atma. So now the ahankara, instead of hooking on to the mind, resolves into the self. And so for the jnani, one of the self-knowledge, your sense of self is Atma, is the self, is the changeless self. So when you say, you know, I am, even I might say I am going to the store, I mean, I'm obviously just the body's going to the store, but my sense of self inside is me, is the self that is always the same. That is my presence, the one that is always there. That's who I am. And that doesn't mean that I don't think or that I don't have moods or emotions or a body or sense perceptions or that I'm not engaged in the world. But the body is engaged in the world. The sense organs are engaged in the world. The mind is engaged in the world. But the being, the truth of it, is asanga, is constant. And so what that means for you as an individual is the mind starts to have differentiated. It's differentiated itself from your own presence. See, the self doesn't need knowledge. The self is always the same. It's the mind that needs knowledge because the mind has taken itself to be changing. The mind changes, which it does, Then it takes your being to change. The mind changes, and the mind's unhappy, then I become unhappy. The mind's happy, I become happy. Then it takes, there's a domino effect. It takes, the mind takes itself now to be a product of the body. So when the body dies, the mind dies, I die. Right? So, like that. And then it, not knowing the nature of my being, it searches for me out there. You know, it's always searching for equipoise or to be able to feel all is well with me, that I'm fine, that I'm whole, that I'm complete. And it's trying to do that by gaining a state of mind. The mind itself is always trying to gain a state of mind, you know, by satisfying desires and making the world in such a way that you can say all is well with me. Like, that's samsara. And that's why the jiva feels so helpless. Because you can never get all the ducks in a row for very long. Right? I mean, it's impossible to get everything lined up properly so that then you can relax for a moment. And then that's about what you do get. You get a moment. Right? But for once you recognize, once this differentiation is there and the constancy of your own being is a given, your mind then relaxes into that constancy, which is what the, and the reason it can do that, because that constant being is jushtam. Jushtam means, you know, peace. It is that which is desired. The nature of your being is the wholeness and the well-being by its nature that the mind has always desired. And it's such a relief for the mind to have that, because nothing can take it away. You are that. It's asanga. Nothing can change you at all. And you're not, the wellness of you is not even dependent on the mind. The mind can't change it either. The mind can be upset or depressed or sad. It can be anything. But it's that in your presence. You haven't become that. You're the one who illumines that and holds that. You're the self of that. And now when the mind knows that, then even if it gets itself into a problem of anxiety or depression or because of its engagement in the world, you know, or whatever's happened to it, it can relax into, it can come home. Because now the home, it knows the home. You are the home, and the mind knows that. And so now, taking it deeper, who is this me in reference to the whole, to the creation? As our knowledge, we'll have to get more into this, but as your knowledge becomes more clear, what you recognize is that this body, mind, sense organs, right, is part of the whole manifestation of the whole, of Ishwara. Just like if you have a dream, that dream is a manifestation of you, of which that dream character is a part. Right? So the dream character is part of the dream manifestation, right? It's part and parcel. The dream story that the individual in the dream is going, the dream story that the individual finds themselves a part of, is the story of the whole. It's not just the story of that individual, it's the story of the whole. So you're life, your sense organs, your mind, your moods, your emotions, the totality of your experience is part of the story of Ishwara, right, of the total manifestation. And that total manifestation is a manifestation of who? The Asanga Atma, of me. And so what happens is you start having more wonder and reverence, that mahimanam, asya mahimanam, recognizing the wonder of this whole thing, the glory of this whole creation of which this body, mind, sense organs is a part. You can do that when yourself is changeless and whole, because you're not at stake. Right? And there's another thing in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna has been talking about this. As long as you have this body is finite. It will die. You have to go through that Since you've taken a body, beginningless ignorance, it's the last time around, but you've taken it. Right? So you've got this body. It definitely, it will die. All of the circumstances that you experience in this creation will change. Because that's the nature of the creation. Your sense organs will get old and weak. Your body will fall apart and die. The ones you love, some will die, and then you'll die, and then some others will die. That's what it is, right? That's the nature. You're not going to stop that. However, once you start, yourself won't die. Yourself won't become unwhole. Yourself won't, the source of the ananda or the being that you are, that will never change. And so when you recognize that, even though it is true this body's not going to become less frail, right? However, you see your whole, the whole expression of your life as part of Ishvara, right? And the whole expression of the universe is part of Ishvara. And so you become interested in it in a different way. You become interested in the infinite intelligence of the whole and how it plays out. And you do your part in it. But that absolute identity isn't there. There's not an absolute identity because you've, like there is for an Ajnani, there's an absolute identity. I am this jiva in this world. Right? I'm a limited being. It's like the dream character in the dream. This is who I am looking around in this creation. I have to make my way. Now, my way is already made. That's why this krita krityaha is how we say it. That which is to be done, that's been done. That means I am whole and I am whole and complete and I can't become more. So, that's differentiated. Did I get too off track for you?
No.
Yes, okay. Okay. One thing leads to another. We're going to stop.
Carol, are you sure about the 50-50 percentages? Like, maybe it's like 90-10.
What do you think? Oh, 90 great?
90, not so great.
The trauma, yeah.
Like a lot of what you're describing about the suffering and the impermanence, I mean, it just seems to me to be like an overwhelming part of the experience of being here.
Well, you know, I think what they mean by that 50-50 is that as the prarabdha, the events in the life, unfold, 50%, that's probably not exact, but 50% are meant to be pleasurable for you, and 50 are meant to not be, you know? But then now, okay, so say as life and goes on, you can see that, you know, some things are much better than others in terms of your own happiness. But say you're a mumukshu, then you start looking and say, what happiness? It's all finite. Happy now for the moment, you know? So that's, and nothing's going to change that. So what's sukha? The sukha itself is a dukkha. You become like the Buddha, you know. Sukha, happiness is sorrow. Because it's bordered by change, right? So as soon as you see that, you're enjoying, now you become sorrowful over your enjoyment. You know, but that's mumukshutvam. You know, that's where you need to be saved. You need liberation once you get there. You know, otherwise, the mind doesn't think like that. It thinks, now, if this is good now, let me just make that last. Now, if this is good, this is what I want, this is what I want, this is great, fantastic. And then it comes to an end and you get really disappointed as though it should never come to an end. Where a mumukshu thinks, sees it right at the start. This is coming to an end. That's how it is. Why should I get so happy about it? Save me. That's when, you know, that's when the mumukshu, they say, the mumukshu throws their hand up to the Lord and says, if there's any way out of this, please help me now, because I see that I can't help myself, because I cannot make the creation something that it's not, and the creation as it is cannot solve this problem. Yeah. So.
That sounds like Arjuna sitting in the chariot.
That's right. That's really interesting with the Bhagavad Gita, how they really painted Arjuna into a corner where they made it so clear he was in a situation where there's no solution. There's nothing to be done. So how can I wiggle out of that when there is no solution to this? And that was the setting for the Gita. Ishwar is the solution. Only knowing the whole is the solution. Or the asanga, you know, the asanga means not attached. Your being is not being changed by anything. That's the liberation. The mind's liberation is the recognition of the liberated self. And it is the liberated self that is the liberation for the mind. Because the mind, even when you're liberated, means you know yourself. The mind goes on changing. It goes on responding, and you know, it's true that it's much more relaxed and has a baseline of happiness and peace because this problem solved. The source of the ananda and the wholeness it was seeking, it's found. And so the mind is different than it was before, that's true. It's more relaxed. But it's still thinking. It's still changing. It's still experiencing the world. You still have thought flow. You're still engaged in all of that, you know. But yourself is always the same. And that self is desirable. The self is what you've always sought. The only reason that it's been missed is because the mind has been so, because of the self-ignorance. The mind has been so stressed and tensed and involved in its own emotions that it never recognizes the one that's lighting all that up. When it recognizes the one that's lighting all of that up and starts to understand, that even the emotional complexity of the mind starts to unravel. You know? But it unravels, as it unravels, it enjoys more peace, right? And that allows it to unravel more. Of course, as it unravels more garbage comes up from underneath that needs to be accommodated. And you know, because we have layers of trauma, the trauma of samsara. You know, of not being able to feel loved in a secure way. I mean, that's what it all amounts to. It is all about love. Imagine being, separating happiness from love. You know, you have to, it all resolves into that feeling that I'm loved. And that's where and if you understand that I am loved, not as anything splashy, but that's the very swarupa of the self, that not loving, love, it's loved. It's different. Loving is active, so the mind is loving, I love you, I'm loving you, all of that. That's fine, that's active. Loved is completed. That's the nature of the Atma. And so when the mind relaxes, you know, and all of its emotions are subsiding, right? Then what's reflected in that mind, what is primary in that mind, is the loved nature of the self. The mind feels loved.
Why does the mind really feel love? I am love.
Because when you say, you don't usually say, I am love. Love is an abstract term. You say, you know, so you wouldn't say, I am love, unless you're trying to be, it's kind of new age.
But when you say, I am loved, who is I? And you're talking the mind?
Well, now when you say, this is the trick in it. When you say, I am loved, as a samsari, you are feeling loved, right? And you're feeling that you're feeling loved because somebody's loving you.
Right.
So if I finish the sentence, I am loved by you, and that feels so good. Right? Now, what if This is like, this is the same thing as with known, right? The known thing. I think nobody likes that one either.
Oh, I like that.
Okay, we're going to do it. Okay, the loved thing. Okay, then you say, I am loved. Now I'm asking, really, you think that the being loved comes from out here? Somebody's loving you, just by your language, I am loved. But actually, there's the self-experience of being loved. Right, that experience of being loved isn't out here. You say somebody is loving me and so now I feel loved. But the feeling loved is an internal. Right? It's not something that you're looking at. Those actually are words that are describing a state of experience for you.
Yeah.
You feel loved. No?
I don't know. I just think maybe it's just the language, but I just think like, well, the mind, because I don't know quite what you mean, I am loved. I don't know who I would be, like, say from a jnani's perspective, who would the I be that's being loved?
Well, for jnanis, they realize that the I and the loved are one and the same.
Yeah. But
that the loved is the very swarupa of the self. Just that that's like how I like to say known is the very swarupa nature of the self. Well, let's look at another word. Sometimes these are just words that are pointing to the Atma.
Yeah.
Now, say if you use the word beloved, the swarupa, the nature of the self is beloved. Or you use the word ananda.
Yeah.
You use the word whole. You use the word asanga. These are all words that are trying to make the mind resolve to recognize yourself. Right? So maybe one word won't help you, another one will.
Just because love to me implies subject-object, I guess that's why.
But what I want people to see is that what they think is being given by the object is only the nature of the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have to, like in your A Moment of Happiness, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We think that that's being given to us by the object. But actually the experience is internal, right? And what brings about this internal experience of happiness? You know? Well, that has to do really with the relaxation of the mind and the reflection of my being in the mind. The manifestation of my being in the sattva, in the sattvic nature of the mind. Because my being has to be differentiated in that you're the wholeness that you are, that loved being that you are, that whole complete awareness, the asanga, one that's always there, the Ishwar bird, that is always there, experientially the same. So that's why I'm always so tricky to talk about these bliss states of mind, or to say that the self is reflected in the mind. Self is reflected in the mind, but the mind is in a condition that's manifesting that self in its own way. So you need to be able to differentiate your own presence in that mind, which is always the same. You know? Then when the mind is in a sorrowful state or an agitated state, that experience of agitation or hurt or depression is an affect unto itself, right? And that's competing. That pain is competing with your own presence. But if you just sit there in amidst that deep depression or pain or whatever it is, you'll recognize, gee, my being is completely there. The conscious, you know, Atma, the Asanga Atma is completely there. But who wants to have this negative, depressed thought? Nobody. But still it helps.
But even with that recognition, doesn't necessarily mean that all of a sudden that depression is going to vanish. I mean, you know.
No, but it helps a lot. It helps a lot because if your mind knows about your own, can recognize your own presence, then that depression can be held by that. You know.
And also if you know like that you are the one that's shining to it.
Yeah. Sometimes you can just let, if you have a state of mind, you can just relax and let yourself sit in the middle of it. Which you are anyway, right? Like it or not.
I am Atma and so is Ishvara, then the different, and then we say, you know, my body is part of Ishvara. So it just seems like the difference is the Maya.
That's right. That's all the difference is. It's the difference is like the body is part of Maya. So the body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishvara, and Ishvara is the Maya Upadi. It means the whole infinite creation is nothing but Maya, and this body, mind, sense organs are part of that. There's only one, that whole thing, infinite manifestation, has only one self, which is you. Yeah, that's right. Is that what you meant? What I'm saying?
Yeah. Carol, do you think being a Mubukshu, I was thinking about what you said earlier about depression. When you're in Mubukshu, you just sort of see at the beginning, this isn't going to work out, no matter how I slice it. Do you think that can actually cause, like, what we call in the United States political depression? I mean, do you think there's any kind of relationship between those two things?
Well, you know, there's more to...
Obviously, that would be the only cause, but I mean, I'm wondering if there's any kind of correlation in your mind.
Well, like in... There's that one famous mystic, St. John of the Cross calls it the dark night of the soul. You know, but for a mumukshu, there's a spiritual pursuit. If there's not a spiritual pursuit there, you know, where you kind of throw up your hands to God or to looking for a spiritual solution, we wouldn't necessarily call it mumukshutvam. So that means, you know, that depression caused by the condition of the viveka and the vairagya, you know, the viveka is the recognition that nothing here is constant. The vairagya is, and how can it make me happy? How can I get anything lasting from it? Say, that's all the farther you go, therefore I'm finished.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Therefore, it's over. Right? So that would be pretty depressing. But therefore it's over is maybe an atheistic stance, and then somebody might take it like that, therefore it's over and I might as well just shoot myself in the head. Or another person might say,
I gotta get a solution.
Or they might say, well, this is the nature of reality, so let me do the best that I can in this, right? So there's so many different ways people will deal with it. But I would say if somebody says they're like has that kind of a mumukshutvam, this is the way it is, and therefore why do anything, and so therefore why don't I just drop over and die? That person's already depressed. That's a depressed person who's gained viveka and vairagya. See what I mean? I would think they already have the depression because of kind of the sequence that the road that they're going down with it. Because your attitude might be, well, that's the reality, so how to make the most of it? More of a Buddhist, you know? Don't cling at all. Don't ask it to be different. Just, you know, don't cling. And he came up with a certain practice that was an acknowledgement of his experience of this, you know, changing nature of things. I mean, Buddhism, just like Krishnamurti, there's a lot of very good things in Buddhism in terms of how to be recognizing the world as something that is continually changing, and everything interdependent on everything else, and that there is no constant, there is no one thing here. They've understood that so clearly. There is no self to be found in the body, the mind, the sense organs, and the fact that all of these are conglomerates, right? They're all pieces that can be infinitely dissected. You can't say that there's any self here anywhere in terms of the things that I experience in my sense organs. You know? And everything that you experience is interconnected. It's just one entity, in a way, of interrelated parts. You know, so hold that consciousness. They don't understand Brahman. But they are pretty good at understanding their experience. The mithya, they don't call it mithya, but I mean the changing nature of experience, that kind of stuff. Krishnamurti also is really good at negation, this neti neti, not this, not this, not this. He's probably one of the best. There is in that. But he leaves you there. Not this, not this, not this, not this. Bye.
Yeah,
he doesn't finish the job.
He would say at that moment, don't you get it?
Yeah.
Don't you get it?
And then,
no. Yeah, he was really frustrating.
Some people think if you go not this, not this. I know because I've heard this. People think if you go not this long enough, this will just turn up. You know,
but the problem with that, see, that there's a huge problem with that. And it is that this is already turned up. It's already there.
Yeah.
You know. And so that's why in Vedanta we say that positive assertion is so necessary. That differentiation and pointing out. And since you are already here, why not point it out?
Right.
What's to be lost in that?
I think people who think this think you can't point it out because they think that the pointing will only be to another object.
Right. That's because they don't understand lakshana.
Yeah.
And they don't understand lakshana means that secondary indicating. And they don't understand the self-evident nature.
Yeah.
That consciousness itself is its own experience that doesn't require the mind or the sense organs or anything. Nothing is required to give the experience of consciousness. It is its own experience. So your Atma, the Atma, is known because of it, because it's known. Because it's awareness. That's why it's self-shining, it's self-evident. The problem is the mind has identified itself with it. And so it says, I am the Atma. Well, the mind is always changing, and sometimes it's depressed, and sometimes it's happy, and it takes itself to be the body, and so it's going to die. Right? So if I can be happy and I can be sad, then what makes me happy and what makes me sad? You make me happy, you make me sad. You know, it's just samsara. It's a domino effect. You know, dominoes are one ignorance leads to the next, and then we're in the complexity of samsara.
And the pointing is so important, I think, to have the pramana, to do the positive assertion. Which
you have to have a pramana.
It's so important. Yeah.
Pramana means of knowledge. Mm. Yeah, Vedanta views itself as a means of knowledge. The Upanishads, teaching methodology to recognize it. Mm.
These have been great classes. Thank you. Yeah.